Smoke Jensen rode hard for 2 days. Unencumbered by a slow chuck wagon and the remounts, he covered considerable northward distance. When he topped the long swell in the high plains early the morning of the third day, he saw in the distance what appeared to be a wagon with a woman and 3 children on board. Smoke held back and looked around carefully for any sign of the woman's husband or any other man accompanying them. When he saw none, he urged Cougar on at a faster gait. Riding undetected to within 20 yards, Smoke reined.
"Hello, the camp!"
He noted the cringe and frightened reaction. Something was decidedly wrong here.
"Hello, you folks in the wagon. I mean you no harm. May I ride up?"
"Okay. Come in, slowly."
Smoke rode in, careful to keep his hands clear of his guns. 2 small girls looked at him with wide-eyed, solemn faces. The boy wore a frown, although more puzzlement than anger. In his hands, he confidently held a .32-20 Marlin rifle.
"Howdy, folks. Name's Jensen. I own that horse herd whose sign you've been marking along the trail. I'm on my way to catch up to him."
"What got you behind in the first place?"
Now, under any other circumstances, Smoke would have found such impudence an affront. But considering that they were obviously alone and frightened of something, he let it go.
"I got mousetrapped into cleaning out the scoundrels and saddle trash from the town of Muddy Gap."
"You're a lawman?"
"I am, Deputy U.S. Marshal, though I'm not on government business at present."
"I see. Your horses are ahead of us, then."
"Yes. Will you pardon me if I ask a blunt personal question? Are you on your way to meet your husband?"
My husband is dead. He was murdered by outlaws who stole our cattle and burned our ranch."
"And why weren't you there to stop it, Marshal?"
"As I said, I'm not here on official business. I'm sorry to hear that, Mrs....
Olson. Delia Olson, Marshal Jensen. This is my son, Tommy, and my daughters, Sarah Jane and Gertrude."
Smoke touched his hat in acknowledgement and made an instant decision. It was not safe for such vulnerable people to be out here alone.
"Well, pleased to meet you. I'd appreciate it if you tell me where you're headed."
"To Buffalo. It's not far, actually. We should be there in 2 or 3 days."
More likely 6, I'd say. "I don't wish to be pushy, Mrs. Olson, but do you mind if I accompany you? At least until we catch up to my horses."
"We would be grateful, Marshal Jensen. And please, call me Delia."
Thank you, Delia. Folks generally call me Smoke."
"Oh, my gosh! The gunfighter and lawman? I read about you in a dime novel!"
"All greatly exaggerated, I believe. Truth is, I've been both, son. Right now, I'm raising blooded horses and selling what I can of them. This really is rough country for you to be traveling alone. I hope that revealing my identity does not change your opinion too much."
"Well, not at all, Smoke Jensen. As a matter of fact, right now, I can't think of anyone more welcome to accompany us."
"Good for you, Ma!"
Rapid as his travel had been for the previous 2 days, Smoke now found his pace diminished to the painfully slow crawl of the aged plow horse that drew the Olson wagon. At the noonan, which Smoke would have ordinarily taken afoot, walking Cougar while he munched a strip of jerky and one of a dozen biscuits he had purchased at the Iron Kettle, Smoke made a suggestion.
"Delia, what say we swap my pack horse for your critter for the time being? We could make a good 20, 25 miles a day that way."
"If we're holding you up, Mr. Jensen, you can ride on alone."
No. That's just what I didn't want to happen. Don't take me wrong. I'm sure you're eager to get to Buffalo and settle in. I'm only trying to help."
"I'm sorry. All that has happened has unnerved me. Yes, that's a good and practical idea. Generous, too. Thank you. Tommy, see to unhitching Barney and exchanging him for Smoke's pack horse."
With that accomplished, their pace picked up considerably during the afternoon. When Smoke indicated the place they would camp for the night, Tommy came to him. The lad had an eager expression that foretold his expectations.
"Mr. Jensen, my pa told me I'm a fair shot. What do you say I go out and find us some rabbits for supper?
Fine with me. You have a shotgun along?
Oh, no, sir. Only my 32-20 rifle. I only make headshots.
Then go ahead.
Smoke reserved his praise for when the results came in. Which, half an hour later, surprised and pleased him. He had only heard 4 shots, and Tommy came back with as many plump rabbits. Deftly, the boys skinned and dressed them, laid aside the livers for the frying pan, and laced the carcasses on green willow twigs, which he inclined over a bed of coals. After the meal, Smoke took Tommy aside.
Out here, Tommy. It's important a man is able to fend for himself. I see you can provide for the table. Now, I want to give you something to help in protecting your family. I took these off a hard case and won't be needing them any longer.
Smoke opened one envelope of his pack rig and took out a .44 Colt Lightning double-action revolver and a .44 Winchester.
I can see no better use for them than that you have them.
I ain't got money to pay for them, Mr. Jensen.
They're a gift, Tommy. Only one thing. Always use them properly.
Yes, sir. I promise. Is there cartridges for them?
What you see in the belt and another 20 rounds. It's not much, but a good shot like you can surely make them count.
I'll never do wrong with them, Mr. Jensen.
And I'll take your word for that, Tommy. By the way, how old are you?
14.
For a moment, Smoke regretted his impulsive gesture. But then he considered the boy's size and sturdiness. Yeah, he'd do. He remained satisfied with his decision until Delia came to sit beside him later, after the children had gone to sleep.
That was a generous thing you did for Tommy, Smoke. Though I must admit it worries me some. A boy his age with such powerful weapons. Though, if he's to be the man of the house, he must take upon himself manly things. It's decided, then. Tommy will keep the rifle and the revolver, and thank you. I feel safer just knowing that someone as considerate as you is around.
Your loss is so recent, I don't suppose you feel like talking about it?
As a matter of fact, I don't. But I must face it. It was a gang. A big one. They came in riding like a band of wild Indians. Their leader was a fancy dresser, like a gambler with a red silk lining in his black coat. My Sven was killed early on. It took a while to kill poor Elmer.
Your older son?
No, Elmer Godwin. He worked for us, although we treated him like one of the family, goodness knows. An orphan boy.
Did you know what caused the attack?
Not really. They were after the cattle, I suppose. They drove them off when they left. The children and I were in the root cellar. Tommy had his little rifle, but I don't think it would have done much against those monsters. They burned our house and the barn.
Then you're wiped out.
Yes, Smoke. All we have are the clothes on our backs, a few sheets and blankets, that old wagon, and a broken-down horse.
And a mighty tough spirit, Delia. When we reach Buffalo with the herd, I'll do whatever I can to help you get settled.
You're a kind man, Smoke Jensen.
No, only practical. There are a lot who would take advantage of a woman in your distress. They might find it more difficult cheating me.
You're a most unusual man, Smoke.
They talked on until the moon rose. Then, Smoke put out the fire with the coffee dregs and rolled up in his sugan, his head on his sack. Jerry Harkness had been uneasy since the previous afternoon. He didn't doubt his ability to ramrod the drive, yet the responsibility of doing it had begun to weigh on him. At mid-morning, with the sun warm on his right cheek, his discomfiture intensified to a full-blown premonition. He did not like the looks of the treacherous ravine on the left, nor the steep hill to the right that had forced the trail into a blind curve. Anything could be lying in wait ahead. Jerry pulled a long face and dropped back to alert the men. That left a young wrangler named Brad in the lead position. Jerry quietly informed the other hands. As usual, the eternal optimist Utah Jack made light of it.
You going old maidish on us, Jerry? Hell, there ain't nobody out here but us.
And a couple thousand Cheyenne. Just keep your eyes sharp. Don't overlook anything.
By then, the head of the herd had walked out of sight around the bend.
Oh, shit! I told you!
Yancey Osborne bossed the left flank of the Urian gang ambush. He spied the approach of the horses and felt a surge of elation. Here they came, by God. If only the fellers in the center held off long enough, the whole herd could be contained right there. The lone rider in the header position looked up right then and saw the barricade built the previous day. His startled expression faintly reached Yancey where he waited. At once, the two swing riders nearest the head of the string of horses began to squeeze in to stop forward motion. From his vantage point, Yancey Osborne saw two white puffs of powder smoke bloom behind the obstacle. A second later, the drover, whose name he didn't know, threw his hands in the air and sagged crookedly in the saddle. His mount trotted nervously a few paces, then turned and looked about in confusion. Another wrangler went down. That served as a signal for Yancey Osborne on the left and Smiling Dave Winters, who commanded the right flank. They jumped their horses into motion, followed by the 10 men each commander. Yancey in the lead, his flankers swarmed around the breast-like swell of the hill, intent on closing on the herd and preventing a stampede. Smiling Dave did the same, leading his men up out of the ravine and directly against the middle swing rider. Down went another Sugarloaf rider. The loose remounts went straight-legged in shock, then bolted inward against the pressure of mounted horsemen. 200 horses at $40 a head represented a good lot of money. On the far side, Smiling Dave watched as Yancey killed yet another of the drovers. So far, Dave considered, it had gone damn well. Luke Britton came face to face with one of the rustlers. He felt a jolt of satisfaction when he saw the front of the outlaw's vest jump and a black hole appear close to the heart. Moments earlier, Jerry Harkness had disappeared in a cloud of dust and powder smoke. Luke looked for his friend, avoiding death by a narrow margin when he jumped his mount forward unexpectedly. At once, he swung on the bandit.
Oh, gotcha, informant.
Luke decided this was going from bad to worse. He ducked low and kneed his mount in the direction where he had last seen Jerry. Seconds later, the two friends found one another in the wild melee. A red stain washed along Jerry's right side from a bullet gouge along his ribs. Having exhausted their cartridges, three rustlers swung their six guns by the barrels in an attempt to club Jerry from his horse. At once, Luke raised his pistol. The other pair pulled off to reconsider. Jerry took the time to shuck the expended cartridges from his Colt and reload three rounds before the murderous trash sprang forward again.
There's too many of them! We gotta pull back!
But the horses! We'll lose the herd!
We're gonna lose them anyway! Alive, we can trail them. If we stand our ground, there won't be a one of us left. Go tell the others.
We got them on the run!
Jubilant, crying Gepard smiled through the dust.
What says ya?
They ain't standing their ground anymore! We got the horses free and clear!
Oh, not so free. We lost 5 good men so far. Tighten up the horses. Don't let them run.
Suddenly, the fiercely fought ambush turned to equally desperate herd management. More dust rose to blind the Urian gang and the Sugarloaf hands alike. Gradually, the confusion diminished. A stiff breeze blew up from the southwest and carried away the brown cloud that had shrouded everything. Dapper as always, although his fancy clothes bore a patina of gray-brown dust, Reno Jim Urian stood in his stirrups and surveyed the scene of carnage. Not a sign of the wranglers with the herd. An old man lay slumped against the dashboard of a chuck wagon. He bled from his shoulder. Quickly, Reno Jim counted the fallen opponents, 8 of them. There had been a dozen. Somehow, 4 had gotten away. No matter, he decided. He waved an arm at the milling horses.
You boys get them lined out and headed for the canyon.
What about them that got away?
Not our problem. No doubt they were wounded, bound to die before they can get any help. Same for that one in the wagon.
Yancey Osborne sent men to clear the obstruction across the trail. The and worked quickly and efficiently. Pop Walker lay still and watched them through slitted, pain-misted eyes. What their leader, the man Pop saw as dressed in fancy gambler's clothes, had said was true, he would be a goner soon. Damn that Wrangler. He didn't want to die out here all alone. Slowly, the herd came under control and moved on up the trail. Before the severity of his wound knocked him out, Pop heard one of the outlaws mention him.
Leave him for the coyotes.
Two days went by with the stolen herd getting farther away by the time Smoke Jensen and the Olsons arrived at the scene of the rustling. He came into view a few minutes before 11 o'clock in the morning. Jerry Harkness saw him first. Although his ribs ached and burned from the infection that had invaded his wound, he raised his arm and waved eagerly to make certain Smoke knew someone had survived. Smoke turned to young Tommy when he saw signs of life.
Bring the wagon along quick as you can. Those are my men down there.
Smoke galloped along the curve to within 10 feet of the chuck wagon. There, he reined in and dismounted, ground hitching Cougar. He made a quick count of heads while he strode toward Jerry. 5 men. Only 5 men left who were not seriously injured. At least they had managed to keep their horses. For a moment, Smoke tasted the bitter flavor of defeat.
They ain't in any hurry, Smoke.
The speaker was Ahab Trask.
And they ain't hiding their trail. We can catch them easy.
Silently, Smoke took in the injuries of his hands. He doubted that these men would be catching up to anyone soon. He spoke beyond the haggard group to Luke Britton.
Luke, I want you to take the most seriously wounded and strike out to the east for the nearest town. If you come upon a big ranch, that might serve. Get the injured taken care of and gather someone to help get that herd back. The trail leads along the South Fork of the Powder River, through the Bighorn Mountains and into Buffalo. Join us there.
Who is us, Smoke?
Smoke nodded toward Tommy Olson as the wagon rolled up.
Me, Utah Jack, and him. That's Tommy Olson. He's a good shot and level-headed. He'll have to do.
I'm going with you, Smoke.
No, you're not, Jerry.
Yes, I am. I was only resting. See, I can sit a saddle.
You're not in that condition.
You don't hurt that much, Smoke. It's getting better, really it is.
Let me have a look.
Smoke climbed into the wagon and pulled Jerry's shirt away. The gouge cut by the bullet was scabbed, with oozing yellow pus escaping, bright red flesh all around it. Long scarlet lines like the tentacles of an octopus radiated out in 2 directions.
Gonna have to clean this, drain it, and put a poultice on, Jerry. It's gonna hurt like hell. But the only condition under which you're going along is that we get that infection whipped.
Go ahead. Whatever you do won't be any worse than what I've gone through so far.
Don't be too sure about that. Luke, go to the nearest trees. Find some with moss. Then gather the yellow-gray parts. A whole lot of it. Also find some yarrow if there is any. And bring the whole blossom. A double handful if you can get that much. Tommy, you go over to the creek and cut me an armload of red willow branches. Bring them back and we'll peel them.
Tommy looked at Smoke quizzically.
What's that for?
Red willow makes a good painkiller. We'll boil the scrapings from the bark and make a tea. I'll pour a lot down Jerry before I soak off that scab. He'll need it. Now, this is where you come in, Delia. Find me some clean cloth, all you can spare, and tear it into strips. Those will boil to clean and bandage the wound.
In 10 minutes, Smoke had a fire going. He examined all the wounded and treated the lightest injuries with liniment, bandaging them tightly when the boiled strips of a bed sheet had dried sufficiently. After half an hour, Tommy returned with a huge armload of willow branches. Smoke set him and his sisters to stripping the leaves while he peeled and scraped the bark. He used a coffee pot from the chuck wagon over mock protest from Pop Walker, who wasn't injured as badly as he thought, to begin to steep willow bark tea. When the boy finished cleaning the twigs, Smoke showed him how to peel and scrape the bark. While they worked, Utah Jack Grubbs watched intently.
That's Injun medicine you're cooking up, ain't it?
Sure is, Utah. Learned it from Preacher when I was not much older than Tommy here.
From a preacher, eh?
No, Utah. From the mountain man named Preacher. His given name was Arthur, but I don't think I've ever heard his family name spoken.
He's one you were telling me about the other night, sir? Smoke?
The same. He was quite a man. A real living legend.
I've heard of him. Wasn't he a bloody-handed murderer? They say he backshot more men than he faced down. Ambushed and killed a whole passel of fellers.
I don't know where you got such fool notions. I know better, because I was there most of the time. Preacher was no more of a backshooter or a bushwhacker than I am. I learned my gun manners from him.
Sorry, I didn't mean to run down an old friend.
There's not many men, living or dead, who could run down Preacher.
Abruptly, Smoke came to his boots, poured a cup of yellow-red broth from the coffee pot, and walked to where Jerry Harkness lay in the wagon.
Here, Jerry, drink some of this.
Ugh, do I gotta? This stuff tastes bitter.
Better bitter than not drinking and put up with what I'm gonna do to you.
Jerry Harkness made a face and reached for the tin cup. He swallowed rapidly to get the liquid out of his mouth as soon as possible. When he finished, he made to put it aside. Smoke reached out and took the container from him and filled it again.
More?
More.
Oh. After the third cup, Jerry had just about reached the gag limit. He licked his lips and made another sour face. By then, the medicinal Smoke required had been gathered and brought to the rough camp. Smoke rummaged in the chuck wagon again and came up with a wire basket popcorn pop. This he filled with the fungus and put it to dry over a low bed of coals. With that in progress, he located a smooth, flat rock and piled the yarrow blossoms on it. He looked around and couldn't find what he wanted. He gestured to Tommy Olson, who came to see what Smoke needed.
Tommy, go back to the creek and find me a fist-sized water-smooth rock. Wash it clean and bring it to me.
Sure, Smoke. If I'm gonna get a good one, I'll have to get in the water.
If you don't take more than 10 minutes, and dry off good before putting your clothes back on.
Face alight with expectation, Tommy sped off. Tommy returned with the rock 20 minutes later. Auburn hair, a darker color now, still dripping drops of water. Fair complexion under the freckles flushed a pink glow from the chill water of the creek. Proudly, he handed Smoke the perfect stone. Smoke set immediately to crushing yarrow flowers. He added more of the red willow scrap and a bit of water to form a paste. This he covered with a strip of cloth from those drying on a thin line strung from the back of the Olson wagon. During the process, he frequently checked the drying fungus. When it reached the desired consistency, he added to the poultice he had prepared and put the rest to soak in an especially strong liquor of willow bark. He looked to see Luke Britton standing over him.
I'll start off now with the wounded, if that's all right with you, Smoke.
Do that. We have two wagons. Pop Walk can drive one, Utah Jack the other. Tommy and I have horses. We'll get on the trail by mid-afternoon and stick to the sign left by the herd. Join back up as soon as you can. And good luck.
It's you who's gonna need the luck, Smoke.
Don't I know it.
Taking up his medicines, Smoke walked to where Jerry awaited his fate. With Delia's help, he administered more of the potent tea and then took hot water and cloth strips and, using his sheath knife, began to scrape away the crust of dried blood that had scabbed over the wound channel. Smoke Jensen worked deftly and quickly to peel open the long gouge along the ribs. While he progressed, at his direction, Delia Olson mopped up the yellowish matter that had collected under the surface. In a brief 2 minutes, which seemed like hours to Jerry, the whole raw wound had been exposed. With hands surprisingly gentle for their size and muscularity, Smoke bathed the savaged muscle tissue. Then he packed the groove with the poultice he had concocted.
Feels so cool. Like you rubbed ice on me, Smoke.
The shots came from the light 32-30 rifle carried by Tommy Olson.
We'll change that in a couple of hours and then try to get some broth down here.
Pop Walker stepped up.
What are you gonna make it out of? Most of our grub got flogged by those rustlers. But we've been making do with cornbread and beans.
If I'm not mistaken, we'll have a rabbit. Or maybe some prairie chickens. Might even be deer meat on the menu.
You mean that little tad of a boy is gonna fetch us our dinner?
Just so. I told you he's a crack shot. He never fires if he can't hit what he's shooting at. So, if I were you, Pop, I'd get to whipping up some of that cornbread. And see if you can't round up some onions, wild or otherwise. Anything to flavor a stew.
Well, I'll be gold-darned. I'll do that right away.
After they had eaten their fill, with Smoke Jensen urging everyone to stuff themselves and put aside what would keep, because it would be a cold camp that night, he changed the poultice and bandages on Jerry Harkness. Smoke beamed down at his trustworthy ranch hand.
You may not feel like it, but you're looking a little better. The poultice is drawing, and the infection is not headed to your armpit anymore. Another day or so, and you can ride.
Well, that's good news. Say, the kid did a right smart job of getting that antelope. Well, when do I get off this baby's broth and sink my teeth into some real meat?
By tonight, I'd say. I set the ribs to smoking over the coals. They should be ready by the time we break camp.
Do you ever not think of everything, Smoke?
Not since Preacher boxed my ears for leaving a perfectly good fireside trestle behind. You got right exercise that day.
30 minutes later, the refugees of the ambush started off after the herd. Most rode in silence. Tommy, atop the swayback plow horse, trotted up to ride beside Smoke Jensen. Smoke noted the boy had his Winchester along.
What do we do when we catch up to your horses, Smoke?
You fall back and protect your mother and sisters. That Model 73 has range enough to make certain none of them get close. It'll be like shooting game. Make sure of your shot. Never miss. And go for the headshots when you can.
But I never shot at a man before.
It's not nice, ever. And you never get over it. But a man has to do what he has to do. I'm not worried, Tommy. You'll be all right when the time comes.
If you say so, sir. I'll try to do my best, Smoke.
Jerry Harkness had been sitting upright the last several miles, leaning over the left sideboard of the Olsen wagon, his eyes on the multitude of hoof prints.
It's them all right, unshod hooves and all. Say, those army farriers are going to play merry hell with these critters when we finally get them there.
Merriment twinkled in Smoke's eyes, and he pulled a wry expression.
It's all part of the plan. At least that's my understanding from what Colonel Albright said in his letter. The shoeing of these horses is to be part of what the Army calls on-the-job training. He's been burdened with green farriers. They need breaking in as fast as these mounts.
Smoke trotted over to the wagon and climbed into the bed. He tied Cougar to the tailgate and went to his Cheyenne medicine supplies. Quickly, he tended to the wound on Jerry's side and repacked it with fresh poultice. When the task had been completed, he cut his eyes to those of his ranch hand.
You're doing better, faster than I thought. The red rays of infection have shrunk by half, and you're taking on a more natural pinkish coloring. Sure, by tomorrow you'll be driving that wagon instead of riding in it.
That's good news. Now, what's the bad news?
Well, you won't be up to fighting for him for at least 3 more days.
And you were right all along. Being a burden on all of you. I should have gone with Luke. Gimped up man ain't no good in a fight.
If I'd have thought you were seriously wounded outside of the infection, I would have made you go. Now stop feeling sorry for yourself and heal so you can carry your load in a fight.
That night, the small party settled into what would be the first of many cold camps. The generous portion of leftover antelope ribs, served out by Pop Walker, along with the remaining cornbread, biscuits, and a pot of cold beans, left everyone with full bellies. While they ate, Tommy hunkered right up close beside him, and Smoke became aware of something that for the moment perplexed him. Throughout the afternoon, Tommy had ridden resolutely at Smoke's side. In camp, the boy had stuck close to him. Wherever he went, Tommy came along. No matter what chore he was given, Tommy went about it cheerfully and with an eagerness that belied the usual surly mood of teenage children. While he conducted his labors, the lad constantly cut his eyes to Smoke to see if his efforts were being noticed. When his gaze locked with Smoke's, Tommy flushed furiously and looked away, suddenly burdened with 10 thumbs. So frequently separated from his own brood, it took Smoke some time to figure it out. "No doubt about it," he allowed, and late evening, when the boy trudged along beside Smoke for a final check of the horses on the picket line, Tommy had transferred his need for a father figure to Smoke. That was gonna get the boy's feelings bad hurt before this was over. Somehow, that just didn't seem right to Smoke. For his part, rather than do the accepted thing of spurning the youngster's devotion, Smoke responded by roughly teasing the boy. To Smoke's surprise, it seemed to strengthen the bond that the lad sought to forge between them.
"Hey, Tommy, are you sure that water wasn't too cold this morning?"
"Why's that, Smoke?"
"Your voice is a full octave higher than before."
"Oh, it is not. It's just, sometimes it breaks and goes back to being a little kid again."
"Growing up as hell, ain't it?"
"Yes, sir. It purely is."
Early the next morning, Smoke's party lost the trail of the herd on a wide stretch of hard shale outcroppings. The wagons pressed on while Smoke and Utah Jack fanned out the search. Shortly before noon, Utah Jack cut their sign.
"I found them! They're headed for Powder River Pass up yonder in the Bighorns. The tracks look a whole lot fresher. They must be having trouble with the remounts."
"That means they're straying away from our intended route. If that's the case, they have a place close by to hold the horses until a buyer can be found. That makes our job easy."
"How do you figure that? There ain't but 3 of us fit to do any fighting."
"Jerry can hold down his own in that wagon. And as I said before, Tommy's a fine shot."
Smoke looked up to find the boy at his side, eagerly soaking up every word.
"Yeah, but are you gonna take a little boy of 14 into a fight with more than 20 hard cases?"
Well, Smoke hadn't been any older when Preacher got him into a shootout with some angry Pawnee. Smoke almost spoke his thoughts aloud, though he refrained because he didn't want to give Tommy any encouragement.
"I'm not gonna get Tommy into any fight if I can avoid it."
"Oh, Smoke, you just said I was a good shot. The sooner we get your horses back, the sooner you can get us on to Buffalo."
"And the kid's got a point, you have to admit."
Brian Gephardt leaned over and tapped Garth Evans on one shoulder.
"Huh? What is it?"
"Look over there! That's them coming! You can bet on it! Believe me!"
Garth Evans focused on the distant ridge. Two wagons labored down the face and slope. 3 riders, one of them looking to be no more than a boy, formed a wedge in front of them. Dust boiled up from the wheels.
You might be right, Prine. If so, what do we do now?"
"What we was put here for. We're supposed to be lookouts, right? What we'd best do is that you light a shuck out of here and catch up to the gang. I'll keep ahead of them and guide the boys in when they come. Now best make tracks."
Garth Evans started to swing into his saddle. Prine Gephardt roused himself to sit upright.
"No, dummy. Walk your horse at least a mile before you mount up. You want them hearing you?"
"Oh, never thought of that."
In minutes, he had walked out of sight of the pile of carelessly strewn boulders. Brian Gephardt went next, also walking his horse until well ahead of the slow-moving caravan. Then, he took to the saddle and ambled along the wide path left by the horses. His confidence soared. He had counted heads. This little annoyance would be easy to get rid of. Another cold camp. From a close examination of the hoof prints, Smoke determined that they had quickly closed the gap. The width of the trail indicated that the rustlers were indeed having trouble with the herd. Obviously, not experienced wranglers, they let the horses spread out too far, making control difficult. Their nearness continued to gnaw on Smoke. There'd be no chance to retake the herd with so few able-bodied men. The best he could hope for would be to continue to keep watch and wait for reinforcements. After a supper of antelope ham and cold biscuits, Smoke felt it necessary to reassure Delia. He took her aside.
"I don't want you worrying about Tommy, or yourself and the girls. I have no intention of going after those horses without a lot more gun hands than I have. We'll trail along, keep out of sight, and wait.
I'm so relieved. All of this, it's so bizarre. Outlaws stealing horses, raiding our ranch and burning it. Now, with chasing after all these evil men, it wasn't like that back east, not at all. We were always so safe.
Yeah, but didn't you notice how much freedom you had to give up to be safe?
I never thought of that. A policeman on every corner, he knew everyone by face and name.
He also knew everything everyone knew, said, or thought, right?
Yes, you're right. Any miscreant was soon hauled off the streets and questioned until he confessed.
Do you have any idea how those confessions were acquired?
No, now that you mention it.
Usually with boots, fists, and nightsticks. Not that lawmen out here found that method unworkable. It's effective, yet to me it seems to take something fundamental out of the one beaten and the one doing the beating.
That didn't apply to our life. Sven had a good position at a large steel mill in Pennsylvania. He was an accountant before becoming a pioneer.
Your children were born there?
Tommy and Sarah Jane. Gertrude came along after we moved west. First, it was Kansas. That's where Sven learned how little he knew about farming, especially dry farming like they have to do there. But he found he had a knack with livestock, cattle in particular. We nearly lost the farm. Sven had a lucky streak when he found a buyer. We bought seed stock and started west, then we ended up here in the territory.
Smoke listened sympathetically to her narration for the better part of an hour. When Delia got to a recounting of her husband's death, she broke down. Smoke comforted her while she cried on his shoulder. The moon had set by the time she retired to the wagon, and Smoke rolled up in his blankets to sleep. Just before dawn, Smoke heard the bumbling group of bad guys long before they ever made camp. The advanced warning had given Smoke time to prepare a nasty surprise. As the gang poured into the camp and fired at the dark forms rolled into blankets, they only served to pinpoint their location.
Oh, shit. Them ain't people.
30 feet away, Jerry Harkness triggered a round from his 6-gun. Hub Volker looked around in panic.
Forget him! Get that woman and the brats and let's get out of here!
At once, the outlaws concentrated their attention on the wagon on the far side of the camp. Jerry Harkness gave covering fire to Smoke Jensen, who darted at an oblique angle toward the Olsen wagon. Their slugs cut the air behind Smoke. Hub Volker and Smiling Dave Winters reached the wagon first. Harry Joe tripped over a saddle. He reached the vehicle in time to take a round full in the face from the Winchester in the hands of Tommy Olsen. Smiling Dave lashed out and yanked the rifle from the grasp of the boy. Delia fought with clawed fingers. Her sturdy nails raked deep furrows along the cheeks of Garth Evans. At once, Delia snatched up the Colt Lightning Smoke had given her son and squeezed the trigger. A .44 slug burned a hot, painful trail through the left shoulder of an incredulous Garth Evans. Delia looked around desperately to locate help. She saw Smoke's path blocked by two hard cases. Both had revolvers in their hands and raised them toward the last mountain man.
Smoke, watch out!
Smoke's 6-gun came up before either outlaw could fire a shot. Jerry Harkness took another wound, this time a through-and-through hole where his neck met his shoulder. Smoke took a step forward, only to see an obscure blur directly before his eyes. In the split second before the rifle butt crashed into his forehead, Smoke saw the grinning face of Smiling Dave Winters looming over him. Something cold touched the throbbing core of the pain in Smoke Jensen's head. Light flickered against his closed eyelids. His dazed senses registered wetness next. Cautiously, he tried opening one eye. Tall grass and a muzzy blue sky swam above Smoke. Suddenly, a blurry face appeared to fill the entire span of Smoke's vision.
Man, am I glad you're back. I was afraid we'd lose you, Smoke.
Jerry Harkness, his shoulder crudely bandaged, hovered over Smoke for a moment, then rose back to where he came into focus. Smoke opened his mouth to a taste like an overused outhouse.
Jerry, are the Olsons all right?
They're gone, Smoke. Those bastards took them. Their wagon, everything. We're afoot. No chuck wagon, nor horse in sight.
Smarting at his failure to protect the vulnerable family, and shamed by his own weakness, Smoke extended a shaky hand for Jerry's help in rising.
What about Pop Walker and Utah Jack?
Pop's over there. They killed him, Smoke. I don't know about Utah. I can't find him anywhere. They might have taken him and killed him somewhere else.
Tentatively, Smoke touched his face. He found blood still crusted in his eyebrows and along his jawline.
I gotta clean up. Then we'll bury Pop Walker and find out what we do next. Is there any doubt that they were from the gang who rustled the horses?
None. But Smoke, what can we do?
We can take stock and decide that later, Jerry.
With the help of his top hand, Smoke Jensen washed the blood away in a dented metal basin. Then he touched the bandage Jerry had put on his split forehead. A wave of nausea rose in Smoke's throat. He fought it back.
We have to get something to eat.
I'll dig a hole for Pop, Smoke. Are you up to a walk the creek? Maybe you can catch up some fish.
Yeah, I'll follow that. We can't afford to waste ammunition on rabbits.
You got the right of it. I took stock while you were still out. You have your Colts and a Winchester. I got my six gun. Together we got about 150 rounds. You got 40 for the rifle, 63 for your revolver. I have the rest.
Sounds better than I expected.
Smoke headed where his saddlebags lay, their contents scattered on the ground. A small square of folded buckskin produced braided twine fishing line and four hooks. Reclosing the container, he pocketed it and sawed out a thin branch from a cottonwood nearby. He used it as a staff to aid his progress toward the stream. Behind him, he heard Jerry Harkness start to dig the grave.
It could be worse.
Though somehow, he could not picture exactly how. By the time Smoke had devoured three pan-sized bullhead catfish, his head had stopped swimming. It only throbbed slightly now. He availed himself of some red willow bark and scraped a small pile of powder, which he washed down with water from the creek. Then he turned to the matter that had absorbed him since recovering.
Jerry, I have to keep after the herd.
Don't you mean we, Smoke?
No. You've been wounded twice so far. What I want you to do is set out down the trail and find help. Bring as many men as you can.
You already sent someone east for help. I say we can do better if we stick together.
And I don't think so. The riders I sent are going to be waiting for us north of Sheridan. The herd won't be moving too fast. And with the Olsons, it'll slow the rustlers even more.
What I can't figure, Smoke, is why they took them in the first place.
And insurance. Whoever is running that gang figures will not try to take back the herd with a woman and children along. That's just their latest mistake.
What was their first one?
Taking my fucking horses in the first place.
While Smoke prepared to set out on foot, they talked of how he would leave sign if the herd changed directions. He would take his saddle and saddlebags along, and Jerry would gather up anything useful when he returned with a posse. When everything had been decided, Harkness still had an objection.
Well, what if that head wound is worse than we think? I should stay with you in case you pass out again.
That makes sense, but there are only the two of us. I have to keep after the rustlers. Now get going. Good luck.
Reno Jim Urian found himself plagued by second thoughts. Burdened by the slow-moving horses and the wagon with the hostages, the gang's progress had been slowed to a walk. Maybe he shouldn't have told Hub to grab the woman and her kids, though they might make a good bargaining point. Another reflection gave him a sudden chill along his spine. This Smoke Jensen had proven more stubborn than he had expected. Reno knew the name, of course. Jensen had himself quite the reputation. a gunfighter of the First Order who was supposed to have been raised by some mythical mountain man named Preacher. Jensen was reported to have killed his first man when he was barely 15. Or was it 16? Well, that detail didn't matter to Jim Urien. Smoke Jensen was supposed to be so fast with a gun that only 5 men had ever cleared leather ahead of his draw. That worried Reno Jim more than he was willing to admit. If Smiling Dave had failed to bash in the man's skull, then as sure as the sun would rise tomorrow, Jensen would be coming after him. Reno did not believe for a moment that he would come alone. Seeking distraction from such gloomy thoughts, Reno Jim turned his horse aside and waited while the lead gatherer of remounts walked past. The Olsen wagon came next between the divided herd. As it rolled even, he touched the brim of his black hat with a gloved hand. A thin, teasing smile flickered.
I trust you are a comfortable Miss Olsen.
Delia warred with herself over outrage at their capture and their apparent continued safety. She loathed this jaunty outlaw in his impeccable black suit and rakish tilt of hat. The pencil-thin mustache on his upper lip seemed to mock her. Grudgingly, she had to admit he was a superb horseman. He sat his mount well and flowed with its movements whether at a walk or a canter. The nickel-plated, pearl-handled revolvers he wore reminded her that, although a dandy, he was a dangerous one. She didn't want to answer him, but she found that she must.
So far, we haven't been treated too badly. Though I would like to give your underling who slapped around my son a lasting headache.
I can understand your feelings, madam. Although you must admit that your boy did kill one of my men, as did you, I do believe.
I only wish
that it could have been more. Fortunately for you, it was not. My men are fiercely loyal to one another. Had you been successful, they might have done some violence to you all.
You wouldn't have allowed that now, would you?
You have me, madam. Truly, you are my whole card. But be assured, I will play you however it appears to my best advantage.
You'll forgive me if I say that I sincerely hope you lose the hand. Because, believe me, you are bucking 4 aces if you go against Smoke Jensen.
There was that cursed name again. Coming from this woman of considerable fortitude almost had him believing it. Perhaps if her faith became shaken, it would deflect from his own cold premonition. Maybe he should relax his prohibition somewhat. Let the boys enjoy a trailside reward. After plates of sow-bellying beans, flavored with hot peppers and vinegars and skillet bread, several of the outlaws broke out bottles of whiskey. When the liquor had made several rounds, one of the trail scum, fired by the raw rot gut, popped up to his companions.
What say we cut high card for who gets to do them gals tonight? First ace for the littlest, first king for the older one, and the first queen for the woman.
What? Just one each night? I'll bet the old woman and the older girl can take on at least 4 of us every night.
Mighty likely they could if we was all bit like you, Prion.
Hey, you bastard. That ain't funny. That does it, you smart asses. For that, I'm going over there and plow all 3 of them fields all by myself.
Prine's challenge met with immediate response. Yancey Osborne came to his boots, hand closed around the butt grip of his Smith American.
Like hell you are. It's gonna be fair share. Everybody gets a chance.
You gonna pull that thing yet? Reno said we could ride those fillies in a mare to our heart's content. I aim to do exactly that.
Draw for high card, damn it!
Not nearly far enough away, Delia Olsen clearly heard their angry voices and knew only so well what it was they intended. Quickly, she reached out and covered her younger daughter's ears. She noted to her satisfaction that Tommy did the same for Sarah Jane.
If any of them so much as touches one of you, I swear, Ma, I'll make the sons of bitches pay.
No, son. They'd kill you this time.
Not before I got a lot of them.
Still determined to press for his equal right to pester the woman and her girls, Colin Fike pushed his insistence.
Cut the cards, Prine! We got a right!
As long as you're a member of me crew, the only rights you have are those I give you. You best learn that well.
I'm not your slave, by damn! Haul out that iron!
Brain fogged by whiskey, Gephardt eagerly obliged him. Even drunk, Prine Gephardt was faster than the befuddled Colin Fike.
No!
Suddenly, the herd dissolved into a mindless, panicked mass of wall-eyed, terrorized animals. They jolted to the right, then back to the left. Then in a second, they dashed away, tails high, in all directions.
Ah, you idiots! You goddamn idiots! Get to your horses! Get after those critters! Move, or I'll kill you myself!
So it ended before it even started. Delia stared in disbelief and relief. The outlaws raced for the picket line to throw saddles on their mounts and flog them after the splintered herd. All thought of rape driven from their minds. Crouched down on the parched ground, Smoke Jensen searched for a small, smooth pebble. With a fiercely hot summer sun burning down over the previous afternoon and through most of his second day in pursuit of the stolen herd, Smoke had exhausted the contents of his single canteen. In the past, he had gone without food many a time, and he knew that hunger was endurable. Now, plagued by thirst, Smoke stretched his perseverance to the limit by entertaining images of what he would like to do to the rustlers who had shot up every visible water container at his former campsite. He had to find an alternative or give up his quest. On his third try, he came up with a suitable light brown stone. Smoke used the last few drops of water from the canteen to wash the little rock, which he then popped in his mouth and worked under his tongue. At once, saliva began to flow. With his temporary measure in place, he began once more to trudge along the swath of disturbed turf that marked the passage of the stolen horses. So long as he found water by nightfall, he'd be all right. Failing that, Smoke realized he could not survive. Back in Muddy Gap, Jenny Parkins found herself restless and ill at ease as she tried to get a gaggle of 10-year-olds to understand the mysteries of long division. When a fit of giggling broke out among the fifth-grade girls, she dismissed school early for the day. Her charges stormed the exit. That still left Jenny with that empty feeling. And darn it, she knew the reason why, too. She had treated Sheriff Smoke Jensen most shabbily. No other word for it. He'd only been doing his job. For a moment, she wondered if he still enforced the law in Muddy Gap. The town had been so peaceful the past 5 days. Fortunately, the riffraff had not returned after the final, brutal expulsion of the most unrepentant. Nah, Jenny chided herself. Not brutal, rather necessary. Goaded by her conscience, Jenny Parkins left the former security of the schoolhouse on what she considered a delicate mission. Her bustle swishing behind her, Jenny Parkins reached the downtown sector of Muddy Gap, slightly out of breath. With a start, she realized she had been walking at twice her normal pace. Face set in a prim expression, she looked both ways before entering the office at the jail. To her surprise, she found Grover Larson sitting behind his desk and Deputy Chase in the sheriff's chair. She looked around a moment in consternation.
Is Sheriff Jensen making his rounds?
He's not sheriff anymore, ma'am. He's moved on with his horse herd.
What? Well, I don't understand. I can't believe that...
Smoke Jensen is a rancher. He raises blooded stock for the rich folks. And a large herd suitable as remounts for the army.
But I thought he was some sort of... gunfighter, a living legend.
He's both, Miss Jenny. Let me tell you a little about Smoke Jensen. No one out here but him knows where he was born. His family was moving west, out to Oregon Territory, when he got separated from the wagon train. He was a little tad, no more than 11 or so. He managed to survive a few days on his wits. Some say he traded what few possessions he had with Injuns for food. They wanted to keep him, adopt him into the tribe. But Smoke had it in his head he could catch up and find his folks. That didn't happen. The old mountain man, Preacher, found young Smoke first. He took him in and raised him up. There's some argue it was a bad upbringing that Smoke learned to fight and to kill. Supposed to have killed his first man at the age of 12. Well now, that ain't true. Preacher was through here a number of years back when Muddy Gap was nothing more than a wide place in the road. I was a youngster then myself, not more than 17. I heard Preacher talking about Smoke Jensen. Said he got his name and the start of his reputation at the same time when he was 16. That came from the man who should know. And in these mountains, Preacher's known to have never told a lie. Oh, there I go, rambling like an old fool.
No, please, do go on. I'm fascinated. I never got to know Smoke well.
Well, Smoke grew up like folks are likely to do. He learned Injun things and their talk, too. Likewise, Preacher taught him to read and write and do his sums. Taught him to trap, skin, and cure beaver hides, though the trade was fast dwindling. Smoke learned about horses from Preacher, also a lot about other animals, and how to respect them and give them all space to live and move about. They say he's whipped the daylights out of more than one man who's mistreated animals. Seems quirky in a man who became a gunfighter and eventually a lawman, don't you think?
I see nothing odd about a person who is fond of animals. After all, they need our care and protection. They can't speak or write, so they can't stand up for their rights like humans can.
I can't agree with you more, Miss Jenny. The way I see it, animals don't have any rights because they can't, negotiate what they will do in order to get them. So a man who mistreats a horse or dog is the lowest form of inhuman trash, and that's a fact.
Larson offered coffee and poured, and they talked on for another half an hour about Smoke Jensen. Before Jenny departed, Marshal Larson raised a staying hand.
Oh, before you go, Miss Jenny, there's something I have to give you. Smoke Jensen left this for you against the time when you might need it.
He reached into his top drawer and came out with a small .38 Smith & Wesson revolver.
Oh, my. Well, thank you for giving me Smoke's present, although I'm certain I shall never have any use of it.
Jenny left feeling somewhat better at having secured a promise that Marshal Larson would send a telegram to the town nearest Smoke Jensen's ranch with her apology. Yet part of her felt worse, mainly over becoming owner of a firearm. She would write Smoke, too, she pledged as she crossed the street to the general store. She would have to thank him for the gun, but also assure him that she would never use it. Idly, she wondered if she would ever even see Smoke Jensen again. Sweat stained the armpits of the shirt worn by Smoke Jensen. The afternoon sun beat down relentlessly. It sapped him of the precious little moisture his body retained. For the past hour, he'd been watching the hazy, insubstantial outline of trees in the distance. Certainly, he had not circled to come back to the Powder Creek. Smoke fixed on the long file of greenery that indicated a water course. Even the pebble failed to do the trick. The length of his stride had shortened, and his head throbbed. Slowly, the green-pale leaves of cottonwoods began to swim in sharp focus. A creek, all right. Smoke forced himself forward. Another 50 paces. His footsteps faltered. 30 paces. Alarmingly, the sweat dried on his skin to a clammy coldness. His body had stopped producing moisture. 20 paces now. The individual trunks of the trees could be seen. The smell of water. Stumbling like a drunken man, Smoke closed the last distance to the grassy bank that hung over a narrow stream bed. Below, the water peacefully glided past. Its surface reflected a cool, inviting green. Last of his strength, Smoke eased over the bank and lowered himself to a sandy shelf. There, he removed his boots and cartridge belt and jumped into the water. Its coolness embraced him. When his clothes had become thoroughly wet, He removed them and washed out the salt and dust. His thoughts snapped back to young Tommy doing exactly the same thing not so long ago. Wringing out his garments, he flung them up on the grassy bank. Cool water had exhilarated him, and he noticed his skin had turned a rosy pink. Satisfied, he climbed out and let his effluvium drift away before filling the canteen. Then, he gained the embankment and spread his clothes on a hawthorn bush to sun dry. He would continue to use the pebble in order to preserve the water, he reminded himself. While he dried off, he drank deeply but slowly from the canteen. When his limbs stopped trembling, he returned to the creek to refill the canteen. He turned his clothes once and was soon dressed and ready, fastening his cartridge belt around his waist and easing the weapons into place. Smoke started off. He had a goodly ways to go before dark. He wondered what he might find to eat along the way. Well over 8 feet long, the sleek, fat diamondback lay torpid on a large, flat rock. Drowsed by the lowering sun, the serpent only vaguely felt pangs of hunger. It had killed and eaten a jackrabbit 3 days ago. Now, the time had come to hunt and feed again. Still, so enervated had the viper become from the late afternoon sun that it only sporadically employed its early warning system. After a long 2 minutes, the forked tongue flicked out, sensing the vibrations and flavors of its surroundings. Then it flicked out again, the creature suddenly alert. So silently did Smoke Jensen move that the rattlesnake didn't even sense his approach until the man nearly came into sight. Lethargically, the viper roused itself and began to coil for a strike at what seemed a huge food source. Ancient instinct stirred, and it completed its spiral with renewed alacrity. The upper third of its body arched into the air. Snake swayed backward, prepared to strike. That was when Smoke saw it. Gathered the body below the rattles and held it at shoulder height while he walked quickly to a stunned oak that rode the top of a low knob. Using a fringe thong from his shirt, Smoke tied the snake upside down from a limb. Expertly applying his Green River sheath knife, he slit the skin from neck to rattles, peeled it back, then opened the pinky white body from severed end to its bung. He used his boot heel to dig a small hole to dispose of the guts. Then he washed the meat with a little of his dwindling water supply. With that accomplished, he looked all around, scanning the horizon for any human presence beside himself. Satisfied that he was alone, he made a fire ring next. After threading the snake on a green branch he had cut, Smoke Jensen placed it over the fire. He wished for salt, then banished that desire. While his meat cooked, he located a chokeberry bush and stripped it of a handful of berries. He would crush these and rub them into the meat while it roasted. The bittersweet tang of the fruit would make a fair substitute for salt. When all had been accomplished, he feasted ravenously on the whole body, buried his fire, and made ready to leave. He had a lot of distance to cover before dark. Smoke Jensen's lean, muscular figure cast a long shadow to his right when he saw the dust cloud ahead. He'd caught up to the herd. He grew more cautious then. Deserting the trail, Smoke bent low and drifted through the tall buffalo grass, skirted sage and hawthorn, and advanced obliquely on the rustlers. When the drag riders came into view, Smoke sat down and disappeared in the waving sea of grass. A quarter hour had gone when he realized that those in the lead were halting the herd for the night. Smoke would wait until dusk to move again. When the last thin orange crescent sank in the west and only the afterglow fought against the encroachment of night, Smoke Jensen left his hiding place and made a circuit of the herd. It took him 5 minutes shy of an hour to complete the journey. He made a careful note of the location of herd guards and, most importantly, their degree of alertness. While he ghosted from tree to rock to underbrush, Smoke concentrated on what choices he had. Looming large in his considerations was his need to know exactly how many men occupied the night camp. He would have to pay them a visit soon, but in order for that to happen, these outer guards would have to be drowsy and distracted. Once he knew what he stood against, Smoke had several alternatives. He could run the herd off and make a break for it, leaving the Olsons to their fate. Or he could run the herd off, along with all the outlaws' horses, and possibly get the Olsons out with them. Better still, Smoke reckoned, the idea would be to locate the Olsons, get them mounted, and drive off all the other horses, leaving the rustlers afoot. He would have the remounts to Buffalo and beyond before the bandits could reorganize. From there, he would force the herd to greater speed, say 20 to 25 miles a day. At that rate, he would deliver them to the fort after a hard 3-day drive. Well, not bad. Smoke confidently believed that the stranded rustlers could not possibly close with them before then. Patiently, Smoke bided his time until shortly after midnight. Then he set out for the camp. He slid past the inattentive herd guards with ease. Not until he drew close to the rest of outlaws around their fire did he have to exert his greatest skill. They'd picked their site wisely, Smoke noted. Two trees stood at enough distance apart to run a picket line to accommodate all of the horses not in use by the perimeter sentries. Good. Made his job much easier. Near the inner edge of the herd, Smoke caught a flash of a gray and black spotted rump and recognized Cougar. At least they would all be properly mounted when the time came to take the herd. Tommy Olsen had worked out in his mind what he could do to protect his mother and sisters. That being the case, he went in search of firewood instead of sending Sarah Jane. In the small stand of alders to one side of the camp, he searched the ground in the dim light. He had about given up for this night when his eyes picked out a gleam of starlight from the smooth surface of a rock. At once, Tommy set down his armload of deadfall branches and used nimble fingers to pry the stone from the grasp of the earth. It came away at last and turned out to be slightly larger than fist-sized.
Perfect.
Quickly, he rubbed it free of dirt and tucked it away inside his shirt. Tommy figured, and rightly, that if any of the outlaws tried something funny, that rock could get him a gun. And that could sure fix any of them with designs on his mothers and sisters.
Yes.
Yeah. Visions of the rock crashing against the skull of a lustful hard case excited the boy. Then he would take that thug's gun and there would be hell to pay. Tommy never considered the very real possibility that he would be shot full of holes. When one is 14 and just sensing the ebb and flow of manly sap within, one thought oneself immortal.